In our breakout and best-selling book, Looking for Angels, A Guide to Understanding and Connecting with Angels, Dr. Scott Guerin and I share how you can communicate with angels, understand signs from the universe and these celestial beings, feel at peace knowing you are always connected to Source, and much more. Get your copy today at lookingforangelsbook.com, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or your local bookstore. And now you can even get the audio version narrated by me and Scott through Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. You are listening to A Psychic Story, a podcast that shares behind-the-scenes insights of people who lead supernatural lives among the ordinary. And I'm your host, Nicole Bigley. Join me every Wednesday as I dispel the myths behind magic and lore. Welcome to A Psychic Story. Mysticism. Welcome, psychic listeners, to another episode of A Psychic Story. Our guest today is an educator, storyteller, author, and poet. She grew up in the middle of the 20th century, the third child in a family with 10 kids. Hers was the fourth generation to live in a Victorian home on the northwest side of Chicago. They did not dwell there alone, however. The house claimed an array of ghosts and spirits consisting of her ancestors as well as those who lived before. Growing up surrounded by spirits enabled her to awaken and enhance her unusual gifts of seeing and communicating with those who dwell beyond corporeal reality. From her first experiences to the present, she is not only a gatekeeper, but a teller of stories that reveal a deeper awareness of the complete nature of reality. This is the story of T.I. Shippers, and we will be discussing the interaction of non-humans, i.e. nature spirits and grief eaters. Welcome to the show, T.I.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
You also submitted a story, and that was included in a listener episode as well. So I'll be sure to link that in the show notes. But yes, you grew up in a house where you just, I mean, wherever you want to start, but I feel like you start to have these experiences at a very early age. Can you start maybe there?
When I was 3 months old, my family moved into our ancestral home. So as I was developing and learning language, and learning schemas for everything in my environment, from this is my mom, this is my dad, this is my sister, this is the chair, this is this, and then whatever this is. I didn't have a name for it, but I recognized that thing that came close and would talk in my ear, or that would walk past the doorway with spreading out its light as it walked past endlessly, or that thing, that dark thing in the corner. Those were all just part of my daily reality. And so I just saw that as normal. It was startling at times. There were some times where my interactions with spirit were frightening or disturbing, but it was just part of reality. So I never thought that everybody else in the world didn't experience this as well. There were lots of children. As I said, I was the third of 10 in 13 years. So there were always a lot of us around. And my ancestors who had lived in the home were Irish immigrants. So they recognized and just accepted the reality that sometimes the dead are around us and would just acknowledge it when it would happen. My mother did not acknowledge it. She grew up differently. Her family is originally from New Orleans. They were part of the Great Migration that came north and the Passe Blanche. So her culture, although very tuned in with spirit, was not actively interacting with ghosts like my Irish grandmother was. So when we told her what we were seeing, she would tell us that we had vivid imaginations, or our eyes were playing tricks on us. So all of us together, my siblings and I, would watch this entity walk down the hall. And we would say to ourselves, our eyes are playing tricks on us. Do you see that? Yeah, my eyes are playing tricks on me too. So we sort of acknowledged it with each other. And then when I was 11 or so, we moved from that house to another house. And for the first time in my life, I realized that every place wasn't as active with spirits. And when I would talk about it outside of my family, you know, people did not understand what I was saying. So I realized that this was sort of an unusual experience. Now, growing up with that, I recognized those things and I recognized the energy, you know. You could tell when somebody comes in a room and is looming behind you, even without looking, you can feel their energy. Well, the energy of the non-corporeal, the non-living, the non-physically living, is also very present. And I learned to recognize that. So when I would go into a place where that energy was present, I recognized it and I knew what I was experiencing. It's like if you grew up with a lilac bush outside your window, and you every spring you could smell that lilac, and then you go someplace else and you smell the lilac, but you don't see it, you know that there's a lilac nearby because you recognize that scent. Well, I have my whole life been able to recognize the energy of the non-physical, the non-carbon based, and have been able to interact with it as I grew older, becoming more comfortable with it.
There was a lot of questions that I wanted to ask you here. And the first one is, I know exactly what you're talking about energy and kind of sensing presence. And I know it can be different for every single person, but the way I kind of explain it is, that's really what a psychic is an energy reader, because you can pick up on energy of people, places, or things. And the way I describe it to people is, it's kind of like if you were to be blindfolded and have earmuffs on and you go into a room and it's crowded with people, like human people, whether it's a party or a funeral, you're probably going to be able to pick up on the vibe. Is it happy? Is it sad? Is it energetic? That sort of thing. So that's one way I think that people can kind of start to maybe correlate a little bit with that. But that's the human kind of presence and energy and everything. I'd love to hear a little bit more from you when you talk about the non-humans or the corporeal. How do different types of presences feel to you energetically? And then I'd love to also maybe get into how you see them too. Too, because you talked about that entity or that dark kind of fog kind of going. But if you don't mind diving in a little bit to that.
There are different kinds of non-physical entities. Some are the dead that were once living. The newly dead feel different than the long dead, because the newly dead tend to maintain their energetic sense of themselves that appears and feels like their physical body did. As time goes on, that physical connection of their energy starts to dissipate. So longer dead spirits, you'll see only part of, or feel their energy more as a overall presence instead of somebody in the corner where it would be like something in the space. So from my experience in my lifetime, I've experienced that change of newly dead to the long dead. And then there are also things that were never living. And I've experienced those many times from very early on in my childhood. My first experience was with never living humans. Well, there was something in my house that I think was just bundled energy of tension, but it became like a thing, almost sentient, but it was just a dark thing that was created by all of the things that had happened in that house. But then when I was five, I was up north in Wisconsin at my grandma's. And I woke up, we slept in a bunkhouse, and I woke up before anybody else, any of the other kids, and I could smell coffee and bacon coming from the cabin. So I slipped out and sneaked into the cabin where my grandfather, who'd sit at the head of the table with stirring butter that he would dip in sugar into his coffee, and my grandma in the kitchen cooking, and, you know, like, oh, there's our little early bird. Well, the cabin was up on the top of a hill that rolled down to a lake, and it was early in the morning, and the lake water was warmer than the air, so a swirling mist was coming off of the lake, and I was looking out the picture window sitting next to my grandpa, and I remember the table was about here, sitting there and watching the mist swirling, and I said, it looks like ladies dancing, and my grandmother said to me, that's a fairy mist. She said, if you listen, you might even hear them singing. And so I listened. I said, I don't hear anything. Well, you have to go outside, she said, to hear that. Now, I grew up in Chicago. We were up in the North Woods. There were no other people around. It was my grandma's cabin and the bunkhouse and just woods and the lake. But there was a path that went out to a point that we would often walk, and there were blueberry bushes on the side. So we'd go picking blueberries, and this path wound out to a point where the lake, there was a bay on the lake. And on the point, there was a tree that had been bound down. The Anishinaabeg, the Ojibwa folks who lived there before they were colonized, would take a sapling and tie it down to show a direction as part of a path or as a marker of something. And there was a tree like that, and we called it the sitting tree because it went up about 3 feet, and then it was at a right angle, and then it went up at another right angle, up, you know, several feet into the sky. And so you could go and sit on this tree. So she said, why don't you go to the point and see if you can see them? And I'm like, by myself, you know? And she said, you'll be fine. So I went out, and between the mist and my little self, my grandmother walked out with me and watched me as I started walking down the path. And pretty soon I couldn't see her, and I couldn't see anybody else. And I had these fluttery sense in me, you know, this anxiety of, wow, you know, here I am and by myself, and I'm going to find the fairies. And I went over to the sitting tree, and she had told me to go sit and just be very still and let them come to you. Just watch the mist and let them come to you. I did. I went and I sat down, and I was watching, and I was looking up, and I was looking up the mist. The early morning, you know, the sun had not come over the trees, so it was swirling, and pretty soon it looked like beings, like these beautiful, huge, ethereal white beings. They were androgynous, but they had this very feminine sort of sense to them, and pretty soon their faces are coming, moving close and kind of checking me out, and I'm just sitting looking, and the next thing I know, I'm hearing this amazing music, and it was not voices. It was like this harmonic melody with like a drone chord of multiple layers, like 12 layers of chord under this very beautiful melody, very soft at first. And then pretty soon it was like all encompassing. And the next thing I knew, there were these two faces that sort of came toward me, and I flew out, and I was up in the air dancing with them and moving around in this music. And it was so incredible. And I was just was so overwhelmed, and I felt so light. And the next thing I knew, I was like laying on the surface of the water. And the way the mist was, is there was like a layer that was not misty. And the mist started a little, like maybe 5 to 8 inches above the water. And I don't know why that is. So I sort of laid myself out. All of a sudden, I was like as big as the lake. I was just spread out, and I could see the whole sky, and I could see all this movement above me. And then I just sort of let myself sink, where I could feel as though I became the lake itself. And I could feel, I was not bound by the limits of my peripheral vision. I was experiencing just the wholeness of nature and the earth with that. And all of a sudden, I had this terrible thought that I was in the lake. And the one rule up at the lake with my grandparents was, do not go into the water without a grown-up. Children drown all the time. You'd be in big trouble if you did that. And all of a sudden, I was like, oh, I'm in the lake. Oh no, Grammy and Gramps are going to be furious with me. And then I was sitting back on the branch, and I was completely dry. And just at that moment, the sun came up over the trees off to my left and behind me, and the whole mist turned this golden color and then just slowly started to dissipate. And it was over. The music was gone. I don't know how long it lasted, but it was already getting light when I was heading there, so it couldn't have been long. So I think it was like an out-of-body experience with these nature entities, these lake spirits or angels, you know. I call them fairies because that's what my grandmother told me I was looking for. And I just ran as fast as I could back into the cabin and slammed the doors. I went, and my siblings were all up, and they were like, where were you? And my Grammy comes over and says, never you mind. And she came over and she put some, made room for me on the bench, and she just winked at me. And we never talked about it. I never told her about it. I did not tell this story until I had children, but I knew she knew.
Well, she probably knew from the look on your face too that you definitely experienced something.
I did, yes. And I was blown away, and I thought, wow, that was so cool. And so I spent a lot of time the rest of my life trying to recapture that.
Do you think that it was an out-of-body experience that you were having, or was it where sometimes when you're in meditation and you're in that flow state, or what I call like oneness, you go to a place consciously, or a combination of both? Now looking back, what do you think that was?
I'm not certain, because I've had many out-of-body experiences and I've practiced that from early childhood. I think it was after that experience, though. I think that was my first time leaving my physical self, because I was out moving around and interacting, you know, and taking the hand of this one and turning and consciously doing things. But then all of a sudden, I felt that rush back into your body, like happens when
it's like astral
when
travel.
You have been. Mm-hmm. Yes, like mm-hmm. astral travel. And when you come back to your physical self, there's this boom into your body. You feel like you're falling back into yourself.
And you feel like the weight of it. You feel like the yes. weight again of your body.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So that happened. So I think it was that. Although the movement of the mist was very hypnotic, and I was expecting to hear the music, but there it was. And it was a profound experience for me. That was the first time I realized, well, I mean, I knew there were things other than what we could touch and sit next to.
I'm so surprised your grandma didn't share anything of, did she ever share her own experiences with that too? Or any of your other family, did they have connections with fairies too?
No, nobody else did until my daughter and my son. Well, my sons and daughters have experienced that out in the forest near where we live here in northern Michigan now. But I think there was a bustle, you know, when I came back, and a lot of little children that she was, my mom was in Chicago still giving birth to my younger brother, and my dad wasn't around. So it was just my Grammy and my Gramps and four or five of us littles and their children who were, you know, young teenagers, young pre-adolescents. So it was a busy time for her. And my grandpa was the storyteller. So he would tell stories. I never really heard her tell stories. Although later on, when I was a teenager, I got really sick and had multiple surgeries, and I haven't fully recovered. They thought it was juvenile rheumatoid arthritis. And my grandmother suffered from rheumatoid arthritis. And when I was given that diagnosis, it ended up, thank goodness, being a misdiagnosis, but she was in end stage of rheumatoid arthritis, and she was bedridden and in pain and just very disfigured and crippled, you know, just very, it was difficult to see, and it was difficult to look at her and think that that was going to be me within the next 10 to 15 years is what they told me. So I had some surgery. And we were all up at her cabin, and she's in her bed. She has a hospital bed out in the great room. All of my siblings were going to collect blueberries, but I was not able to go because I wasn't able to walk well enough to be able to do that. I was using canes and the sand and climbing on the hills and stuff. I was not physically able to go blueberry picking. And so I was sitting there, I had a book or something, and I was just pretty much feeling sorry for myself. And my grandma just kind of looked at me, and she had these bluest eyes that were just really warm, these watery blue eyes. And she looked at me with this very conspiratorial look. And she said, never make a list of what you can't do. Make lists of what you can do, and you will find things to do that you would not have done were you busy with the things that you can't do. So it's going to open things up for you. But she gives me this conspiratorial look, and she used to keep like chocolates hidden, you know, fancy chocolates hidden. And when we were alone, when everybody else was out playing and I couldn't go, she would have me go get the box of chocolates and we'd each have a chocolate. And so I thought she was going to ask me to go get the chocolates. And she said to me, they can't do what we can do. And I just kind of looked at her and, you know, just agreed. You know, I wasn't sure what she meant. And then she said, you don't think I just stay in this bed now, do you? I said, well, no, of course not. She had an electric blower. My grandfather would take her for rides in his, you know, out to on drives and things. Said, no, of course not. You just don't stay in the bed. She says, no. They can't fly like we can fly. And she winked at me. And I was like, and I had been doing out of body, traveling outside of my body to be able to escape the pain that I was experiencing and to be able to keep doing things when I was restricted and not able to, if I was in a hospital or in a wheelchair or unable to go someplace, I would go anyway, but without my physical body. And I thought that was what she meant. I was pretty sure that was what she meant. And then she said, we'll be just fine, something to that effect. And so I think that was a connection from us again about those experiences that are outside of the normal, outside of the regular physical life that so many people just spend their time paying attention only to. And she and I were given the opportunity to look beyond that.
Well, that is so cool that she saw that and recognized that in you, even if you hadn't talked about it before, and that she was also giving you that confirmation that she wasn't chained necessarily just to the physical body or to her experience, which I'm sure was also very healing and freeing for you to hear as well. So obviously, if there's a soul who's crossed over that was originally living and is now non-living, but it used to be a human form, that feels more, in my opinion, at least from my experience, like a personality, like an actual person. When it's angelic, the best way I can say is it feels celestial, like very light, love, peace, that sort of thing. I've never seen fairies. I've had a couple encounters when I was really, really young and never really saw them or haven't really done anything, or as I also call elementals or those nature spirits, but I do kind of sense their presence, and it feels more like a earth, like the actual elements. So that is one way. I know it's like kind of hard sometimes to put it into words. Ghosts are a whole nother thing. So I'd like to get your perspective on that. I have sometimes felt extraterrestrial energy. I've definitely felt like bad spirit, or what I refer to as entities. I know entities can be interchangeable for good and bad, and then also demons and stuff like that. So I don't know if there's anything that you can share, again, how you can sense and differentiate the presence in some of those. It doesn't have to be all of them, but just share a little bit about that with listeners.
Okay, so I think the best way to describe it, and I know this is so cliche about vibration, but we ourselves vibrate at a certain level. When we meditate, that changes. Our heartbeat changes, our brain waves change. And when we're connecting with different spirits, they have different vibrations. So human ghosts or the dead vibrate more closely to the way we do as living humans. But there are things that have a much lower vibration. And to connect to them, what I will do is lower my vibration. And then there are things that are higher, that are like, and the fairy energy that I've experienced where I live and in other places is higher. And I think that might be why they've been referred to as little people. Because the smaller you are, you know, as a musician, the shorter the string, the higher the pitch, the faster the vibration. And so this higher vibration of these forest elementals, fairies, is a higher vibration. So to connect with them, I shift higher. And when I start to sense that vibration, I don't know how I do it. I just tune in to it, like hearing a note, and then move, like if you were to match a pitch with your voice, I match the vibration with my vibration, not so much through my voice, but through my own aura, my own energy can shift the vibration to match that, I think. And that's why we've seen them and seen them together, you know, in groups. Whenever I go to this place in the forest, I always bring an offering. I always bring some food, bread, honey. I do bread and butter and honey because milk and fruit and nuts. And I leave it. And of course, the living forest creatures partake of it. But bring something. And I'll bring a flask of whiskey or a little flask of wine, and I pour it on the ground as well before I'm going to interact every time I go. I go to this place, there's a creek, a spring-fed creek and a spring that I collect water for my rituals from. And I don't take something every time I go, but I always leave something. And I also do something musical there. So I will play an mbira, a little thumb piano, or I have a little recorder I'll play, or I'll sing. When my daughter and I go, we sing a harmony note and then modulate it. And it can hear it talk back. We've seen a ring of light on Beltane, full moon Beltane several years ago. A group of five of us went out and just very quietly and all of a sudden, and the night forest, this is in the middle of a national forest, is very noisy. There's all kinds of sounds, including the creek and just those many things, sounds, peepers. It was that time of year. So spring peepers were peeping, and all of a sudden everything just went silent. We're all standing very still. And one of the women with us was visually impaired. And we started to see this ring of light just down the grove, just a little bit in a grove of trees. And the moon had not come fully up, so it was not a reflection. It wasn't like the big moonlight casting a reflection on something. And it started as a ring, probably a 4-foot ring, where it was blue light, and it looked like flames. And it started about 3 inches tall, and then it was swirling. And after a few minutes, and it's dead silent in the forest. And I just said, look over there. And everybody went, and then it raised up until it was almost 2 feet or more high. It looked like flames, but it could also have been just energy moving in this counterclockwise circle in this grove on the 1st of May, full moon. My friend, who's visually impaired, said, oh, I can't see anything. And I just said, don't look with your eyes. And she's an energy worker. She's a very shamanic person. And she knew what I meant about you look with your mind's eye. You don't try to see physical. You connect to that place. And she was like, oh, I see it. I see it. And there we stood watching this for several minutes. And all of a sudden, I just got this, okay, that's enough. Get out of here. And I said, okay, it's time to go.
They were kicking you out.
They was like, here, have a look. Now go away and leave us to our ritual or leave us to our dance. And I always heed that. Sometimes when I go, I'm ready to go in and it's like, well, we're busy. Don't come now. And I don't stay. I will leave an offering.
No, that's so cool. I only experienced it once when I was younger. I believed in the fairies. I don't know how or why, other than I think I just knew. I didn't, until I got older, what I was kind of feeling and leaning towards was fairies or elementals or nature spirits, whatever you want to call them, the fae, they're like guardian angels of earth and different elements. And they're spirits that protect the other sentient energy, whether we recognize that or not. And so I was determined to see one or have an encounter. And I don't know how old I was. I must have been like maybe 5 or 6. And I was sitting in my paternal grandmother's front yard in her garden. She always has beautiful flowers and everything. And both my grandmothers did, but in an old school tape recorder. And I was talking to them and just, you know, whatever I was saying, like, I know you're here, but you know, if you want to say anything, here's a tape recorder. And then I just let it play. And then, because I was getting bored, it was like hours of nothing, not experiencing anything. And this was also not like yourself, where I knew to kind of look in my mind's eye or anything else like that. So I was physically trying to see, and I was physically trying to hear. So I went away, and then I came back, and I was like, oh yeah, I need to go get that tape recorder. And I brought it back in, and I played it back. Hours later, you know, I'm listening. And then I heard very faintly, she's gone. And I was like, oh my goodness. And so then I was like all excited. And I run and I go to my grandmother. I think my mom was there too. And some of my aunts. I was like, listen. And then I go to play it and it's silent. It just wouldn't play. It was gone. Like, so just like the she's gone, the message was gone. So from then on, I always knew and I believed. And it wasn't anyone playing a trick on me, because I literally was sitting on the sofa, like peeking in the curtains to see like if I could see some sort of fairy. That didn't happen. So no one went up, and it wasn't one of those tricks, you know, that a family member or somebody would play on me. So I thought that was amazing.
What a wonderful gift that was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then they took it away. They were like, all right, you get to hear it once.
It was for you. It wasn't for them. It was confirmation for you. And that's the other thing that I've learned, is that sometimes it's not for us, and sometimes it's not for others.
So what are the things, and then I want to go on to some of the other kind of energies, but what are some of the things that the fairies can do for us? So like you mentioned that you go, and obviously you want to have these encounters and interactions with them, the offerings, all the different ways. Thank you for sharing the various ways people could kind of connect. But when you're doing that, what's the intention or the purpose to, I'm imagining there's some sort of exchange, like you're either asking them for something or vice versa. So what does that look like?
Well, we live in a very precarious time environmentally, and we are doing things to this earth that are harmful, not just to the carbon-based life forms, but to the others who dwell side by side with us. And that's why I refer to myself as a gatekeeper. I'm not in charge of opening or closing the gate, but I'm somebody who on this side of this existence, I can transcend the gate. I can see through the gate. There have been times when I've gone out there and I've seen someone where the air is just shimmery and there's someone standing behind between these two. It's when I walk through these two trees, these two ancient grandmother trees, that's where I enter. And I always ask permission. And I was actually sitting there and I was painting. And I looked up and it was just shimmery, like heat waves off of a hot pavement. And on the other side, I saw someone over there looking at me and put hands out like this. And so I just did the same. I think they have a message for us. I think that once we acknowledge that what we do, our footprint here doesn't only affect us and the birds and the insects, it affects so much more. So much the vibrant energy of this living, breathing world. And I think that those messages need to come, we need to work together with those on the multiple other sides. There isn't just one other world. There are the other worlds. And I think they're calling out and we need to connect with them. So the exchange is I get this message of the sacredness of the earth and nature. And then in my work as a teacher, as a activist in my community, I'm a politician, I'm a city council member. In my work, I take that knowledge of that sacredness and in helping create policy and in educating young ones, I can instill that sense of the sacred to them. And hopefully we can start to heal and shift our behaviors. And I see it. I see it. Now, there are multiple gatekeepers all over. You know, more and more people are talking about their interactions with things from the other world and they're making themselves known. And I've talked with one of my daughters about this, that are they clamoring at the gate saying, don't go too far or we're moving in kind of thing? You know, we're going to come back and take over. There are ancient stories of when the fae, the other world and the human beings lived side by side where you could walk down a road and run into, you know, the good folk. And that changed as we started, we became a world of kings and of hierarchy and of extraction. And we have gone past the time of kings to the time of extraction capitalism, where we get power from taking things from the earth and using things in our environment. And we're at a precipice. We're at a shift to move from extraction capitalism to creation cooperation. And I think that's the message that's coming through. And those of us that experience that can spread that message, we need to stop being afraid of being called woo-woo or loony or whatever. You know, I'm a well-known person in my community and I tell these stories so that people realize that we need to do something now to make this everything better. In this one lifetime that we have physically, we can change things.
You said so many important things as you were talking. And one of the visuals I was getting in my mind's eye is they were showing me, they being my spirit team and guides and angels, that we used to live on the land. We used to live with the stars as our blanket. We were one and we communed more. And then when you were talking about the kings and the hierarchy and everything else, it was there's these castles or there's these buildings or these shacks. And we then became more insulated and, you know, separate from earth, but also from each other. And the more and more that happened, that disconnection, we removed ourselves from being able to experience the kinds of things that you experienced when you were around the age of six or so with the nature or the nature spirits and the energy. So that's a big piece of it. But also, thank you for sharing the message about it's not just, I mean, if you're interested in connecting with fairies or guides and angels just for the purpose of experiencing it, that's great. But there's always usually going to be a purpose or a reason why you're having those experiences, whether it's just to show you that you can, or like in your instance, in your case, your role is as far as what that looks like. I would love to dive a little bit more into the gatekeeper topic because I've heard it, but I never really thought about it. And the fact that you kind of give yourself that role and that responsibility. So can you share a little bit more about that?
As a gatekeeper, I see it as a great responsibility to help make that connection between here and there, here and everywhere. And I do that by helping grieving people with their deceased loved ones. I do that by getting the message of the nature spirits and passing that out, but also by protecting the gate, because there are those that would use this for nefarious purposes, for their own aggrandizement or gain. And so it is a connecting and a protection. Like, okay, this is enough. This is far enough. And also things that are being entities from the other world that are being harmful to living, to unsuspecting living ones. There is a sense of needing to do something for that too, to find a way that helps both the living and the non-living.
I always come across when I'm asking for words, especially when you're experiencing energy or you're experiencing something spiritual, because as humans, we want to be able to find the word that it either defines or communicates, but that's not always one that exists. So that's why I was gravitating towards the gatekeepers, because it does feel very protective in a lot of ways. And I also love how you talked about the connection. It's almost like you're this bridge, like this human bridge between the different worlds or the dimensions. And how did you come across this term? Was this something that just came to you inherently and innately? Or was it you heard it and then you're like, that's what I am, or that's what it is that I do?
I didn't hear it. I've heard it since. It was something that I came up with. And I think it's the way I describe, instead of the veil. You know, people talk about being able to see through the veil, or the veil,
like that curtain
is,
that's like holding us from seeing something.
Mm-hmm. Right. But a gate opens, and a gate can keep things in or out, but it can also open and be welcoming. Whereas a veil is just there. You know what I mean? And a veil hides something.
It's like a cloak.
Yes. And it's to hide something. When women would put on the veil, it was to cover themselves and hide themselves. And I don't see this as something that's hidden. I see it as something that is readily available, but it's a gate.
I have to share something with you. Sorry. As soon as you were saying that, I'm one that, first of all, I'm a little bit congested and I'm getting over it. So I know that this is like a real thing. I started to smell flowers, like almost like funeral, like the overwhelming sense of flowers. So I just wanted to share that if you saw my eyes. So anyway, so that's, I don't know if that's your guide or angel or whatever, if you tend to smell a lot of flowers, but I'm feeling and sensing a lot of floral scents right now, which I don't normally get that sensory, that smell experience.
Well, you know, flowers are part of nature, and flowers are the things that are necessary to grow seeds to continue to grow. So if you're smelling flowers, this is something, and I've just got this rush. This is connecting. This is nature saying to you, we are all flowers. We are all seeds, you know, and those little tiny delicate things that sometimes when we walk through the woods, we don't even notice the little tiny flowers. That is the sign of rebirth, of rejuvenation, of fertility, of life going on.
Well, what a beautiful gift. I just want to say thank you to whoever's giving us the flower scent, because flowers are also one of the higher vibrational frequencies of Earth, which is why we tend to smell flowers when angels or other things are around, loved ones and perfume and that sort of thing. So, well, I love the term the gatekeeper. Thank you for explaining that. Also, just the fact that it is not like a veil and a cloak and that you're able to protect and connect. I do want to also talk a little bit about, before we end here, you talked about grief and grief eaters, and also that you learned a lot when you were younger about those other energies. And I don't necessarily know what you call them or and all of that, but share a little bit about that and how it's helped you be that gatekeeper in an entirely different role and responsibility. But there's the bridge to the light, and then there's also that darkness and how you help dissipate that.
I've given the name grief eater to when I first experienced them is in cemeteries. I have never been to a cemetery or a burial ground, even a burial ground without gravestones, ancient burial grounds that in those places where there is a sentient being that is associated with those places. And early on, I experienced it. It's something that is of the earth. It's natural. It has a symbiotic relationship with we humans because we, for some reason, we take our dead and put them in a place where there are other people put their dead in graveyard cemeteries. Food to them is our grief. So we open up the earth and we walk to the cemetery. We enter the cemetery carrying this heavy burden of grief. When you lose a loved one, a very close loved one, it is a physical as well as spiritual experience. And that grief is a heaviness in every cell and your body vibrates differently with grief. I can be near someone who is grieving and know I can sense it from them, even if they're laughing and, you know, it's like, oh, ouch, you know, it hurts. It hurts. And so we go, we open the ground, we lay the bodies of our loved ones in and we weep. And you'll see bend over, some people will wail and mourn. And the grief eater comes and draws that energy from us into the ground. So when we leave the cemetery that first time, we feel exhausted. You feel a little drained. And then you go back into the living in New Orleans, you know, with the parade to the cemetery, and there's the grief eater, and everybody, the dirge is sung, and everybody mourns, and you let it go. In my ancestral culture, my maternal ancestral culture, you cut the body loose, and then you go back into life, and you leave your grief there. And then we go back and we visit the cemetery. And I go, my mother and father and my brother are all in one place in Wisconsin. And I go there every time I'm up there. And I let more grief go. And I feel the grief eater, like I'm nourishing the grief eater and the grief eater is nourishing me. And so I've recognized these things everywhere. Going to my uncle's funeral, as soon as I got there, the grief eater in that place, because I've done work in these vibrational places, recognize me.
So it's actually a good thing then.
Oh, it's a very good thing.
I think by the name, if somebody were to hear it, they'd be like, ooh, it's like, I was thinking of the Dementors in Harry Potter.
Yeah, they don't look like the Dementors. Although when they're in the wrong place, they do suck the energy out of folks. And that was the thing that I was able to deal with in being a gatekeeper and helping this one grief eater and this family. But I have asked for their help to find some things when I've been dealing with ghosts that are trying to get a story through and trying to show me, like, where is their body kind of thing. And I'll say, you know, show me where it is. And the grief eater, this being that I have this energetic connection with, will help me.
So are they like a member of your spirit team, like yours in particular, or is it like a energy or entity that you like call in and connect with?
They're not with me all the time. I can call and connect with them, but in those places. I don't call them out of those places.
They have like a place and a purpose.
Mm-hmm. They are in a place where they can be fed without harming anyone, with helping humans. When they end up in a place where they are not fed, they still need that kind of energy. They need grief or depression or, you know, something. So one night I got a message from my daughter to look at someone's post, a friend of hers downstate here in Michigan. And she said, the post was just, my house just screamed. And so my daughter said to her, you need to call, you know, Amatia, you need to call my mom. And so she said to me, can Carrie get in touch with you? And I said, absolutely. So we started corresponding and I went down to find out what was going on because they were having all kinds of really strange things happening in the house. But the biggest impact was that her husband was suffering from clinical depression. And when he was in the house, he would sit in one spot and he would just sink and sink and sink and sink with this crippling depression. He was taking medication, but when he would leave, the further he got from the house, he would feel better. And as soon as he came back home, it was like this oppression. He was being oppressed. So I went there, walked in, and immediately knew who the human ghosts were there. And we were going to go into the dining room, walk straight ahead, and there was a parlor. It was an old Victorian home. There was a parlor to my left, and I was just drawn there with a big window. And I said, let's go in here. And as I stood there, I just felt this overwhelming, like this vibration spinning around the outside of the house. But there was also all of this energy and sorrow in the house. And I sat in, I said, can I sit here at this chair in the corner? And both she and her husband kind of looked at each other. It turns out that was the place he would sit when he would feel like he was, the life was just draining out of him. And I, as I sat there, I connected with one of the human ghosts first. And I started to rock and I felt like I was rocking. And I got the picture, when I connect with human ghosts or spirits, I know their story. I don't feel it anymore. I used to feel what happened to them, but I'm able to now, instead of empathize, I can have compassion, which is different. You don't have to feel the pain to have compassion for the pain, kind of thing. But she sat in a rocking chair in that corner as her baby died in her arms. And the scream that they heard in that house was her throwing her head back and screaming the scream of a mother's greatest grief. And that's what was happening in that house. And then after the scream, after this would happen, things would settle down a little bit. And there was a gentleman in there who was her husband. Well, I had a sketchbook. I can also draw these entities that I see, these ghosts that I see. And so I just do, and it's like scribble drawing. My hand just scribble, 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 scribble. And pretty soon there is a face and upper body. And I said, this is her. And Carrie pulled out a folder that she had with history from the house. And there was a picture of the woman who had first lived in that house and built it. And it was her. I mean, it wasn't like, oh, it looks kind of like her. It was her. And then all of a sudden I had this compulsion to draw again. And instead of, usually when I do drawings like that, I flip the page and do the next drawing or do one off to the side. But no, right over the top of her, I started scribbling another drawing with the heavier pencil. And this, it just totally obscured her. And there was the face of this man. And she goes through the file and pulls out this woman's husband. And so he covered up her image on that page. And I've never had that happen. Somebody that was there with me saw it as, you know, that he was overpowering her and not letting her be who she is. But I saw him as trying to protect her. So I talked to them, and they had felt like when the husband would be playing piano at night, there'd be hands on his shoulders, you know. So we just set up some guidelines. I did not want them to leave because there was something really dangerous spinning around that place outside. And I could see it like this black inky thing just go whoosh past the window. And I could see it in the front windows and then around the house. And I could just feel it just circling this frantic.
Like Dementors.
Yes, it was really scary. And it was something that did not like me at all, did not like the fact that I was there. But we put protections up on the windows. I showed them how to prepare salt and hyssop and create their own and use their own energy to keep that thing out. And it was about a 3-year, maybe a 4-year process of helping them. Eventually, the ghosts that were there left. And then there was a time that this thing was getting in again. They sealed up cracks in the basement. We did all kinds of stuff to protect, to keep this thing out of the house. Well, it turns out that back in the 1870s, when this town was being developed, there was a graveyard in the middle of the town, and the town outgrew the graveyard, and it was prime real estate. It was like blocks off of the town square. So the developer said, well, let's just move the graveyard and build here and build a bigger graveyard over by the lake with more room, and it can expand outside of town, and then we can have a, you know, build houses and develop here.
Let me guess, they didn't move the bodies.
Well, what they did is they put word out for everybody to move their own bodies.
Yeah, but if you don't have family that is alive.
Exactly.
Yeah, then,
mm-hmm. So they were there, and they were already, it was already surrounded by buildings. And the grief eater that was living cooperatively in this graveyard was still there. He didn't move with the bodies that were moved. There was no funeral procession taking them there. They were throwing gravestones in wagons and taking them down and just putting them up and putting people back in their coffins, back in the ground. It was bedlam, and people got lost, people, you know. And what was really lost was this small grief eater who was now trapped there and had no idea what had happened. So what does this grief eater do? It's starving. It was the ghost of Sarah, who was still in the house, screaming, relived the death of her child over and over again. And every time she did, it was food for this grief eater. When the husband in the house would sink into depression, this thing was coming up through the window, from the basement, through the window, and sucking that block. It was like one block area. The name of it is Piety Hill, is what this area is called. And so the whole block, there was all kinds of things. There was, in the house just down, someone was arrested for child pornography. There was drug sales. There was addiction. And this is a upper end, you know, this is a suburban, you know, this isn't like people in poverty, but there was so much discord in that community. And it was this thing trying to survive. Now her young daughter, 13-year-old daughter who lived there, was an artist, and she drew, we were telling her what I was feeling this thing was. She drew a picture of these things coming up out of the crack in the basement, and next to it are pictures of McDonald's bag. She didn't ever eat fast food. She saw that as, you know, they were very healthy, and, you know, that was junk food. And it was that this thing was eating food that was not fully nourishing. So I tried to think of, you know, I could just keep it outside for so long, but then I went there once, and instead of going in the house, I just walked in the garden. We stopped gardening. I mean, did not want to open up the earth at all. It was so bizarre. And I could feel it vibrating underneath. Whenever I go to a place where I'm going to help with a haunting, I go with just love and compassion. And so I gave love and compassion to this thing that was very dangerous. And I said, I'm not here to hurt you. I'm here to help you. I'm not sure how yet, but I will help you. And I just felt this vibration. And every time I came after that, there was a connection. So then what I did is, over time, in my own spirit team, I called my spirit team in, and I called my human team together. And we created a plan whereby we were going to move this grief eater to the new cemetery. And in order to do that, we had to do ritual. We had to figure out how to get it to come with us. It had to be, you know, I was looking at like master key spells where you get things to do your bidding, and no, that was not going to work. We needed to convince it to follow us. And so I put together a team with the woman whose home it was, a dear friend of mine who is a very, very psychic energy worker, who had experienced a stillbirth. And so she had experienced the grief of a lost child. So her grief would be recognizable to this being, to this grief eater. And she bravely said she would come and conjure that grief to help it recognize, to follow. My former in-laws lived in the town. And so when my former father-in-law passed away, I went to his funeral. There it was open, and there were the grief eaters there. And so instead of just trying to move something without permission, never do that, never take something to someplace else without permission. So in my mind, I connected with the grief eaters there and said, there is one, can this come and join you? And I just got, and it may be, you know, when I was talking to somebody, they said, well, did you just convince yourself that it was okay? But it wasn't. I knew there was permission. And then I'm standing there, and I'm trying to figure out, because one of the ritual things is you use graveyard dirt and some other things, and you create a, like a breadcrumb trail. But this is early April, and we're going to be doing it. We ended up doing it in November at a full moon. But I'm in the cemetery where we're going to be taking it at this funeral. And there's the sod all stacked up, and I'm looking at all this dirt, and I, you know, how am I going to discreetly amongst these, my former Look, when I'm an outlaw, how am I going to discreetly collect graveyard dirt for this breadcrumb trail? And how am I going to save it? Because I wasn't expecting this. I didn't have a little plastic bag or anything. And then I was given a rose from the funeral bouquet. And at first it was like, would you like one? And I'm like, yes, I would. So I had that rose. It was all open. And I just very discreetly, you know, was breathing. I was wearing like this cape thing. So under that, I'm pouring the dirt amongst the rose petals to hold the dirt in the rose petals. And that was what I used. And I put it in a clay jar that I surrounded with red brick so that it would be hidden. I had to hide everything we were going to do so that this thing wouldn't get scared and not comply or not come with us. So the breadcrumb trail was not only the cemetery dirt, but it was also the dried petals from funeral flowers. So it was things that this thing would recognize.
I said funeral earlier and the flower smell.
Okay. All right. So maybe
I just got
the
chills.
Grief eater telling us.
Because I didn't feel it being very angelic, but I didn't feel scared. Mm-hmm. So that's a thank you. They're saying thank you to you because I said thank you for the flower smell. There you go.
Okay, cool. And yes, and they're not angelic, but they've been called evil, you know, because people that go to cemeteries for entertainment and do bad things have the bejesus scared out of them and are frightened off by things. And so haunted cemeteries are generally not haunted by people, but by fearsome grief eaters that are keeping people away and protecting the ground. So on the night of the ritual, we had another energy worker who was a Reiki master, and her job was to walk behind me and keep blocking the energy moving forward. I was going to do the chant and ask it to follow me because I was recognized. The two other ladies were up front dropping the breadcrumb trail and carrying my friend Ruth Ann told us about a ghost supper, and in the Anishinaabeg tradition, where you make a spirit plate and you leave it for the spirits. And she saw, we all met at her place before, she was going to come and then she couldn't. So she stayed behind and did drumming and lit the candles with her granddaughters to help guide us. And she gave us the song to sing to summon it that she herself had come up with. So she told us to do a spirit plate, and we brought some birch bark, and we went out to dinner at a restaurant in town before carrying the grief eater. And what you do is before you eat anything, you take some food off your plate and you put it on the spirit plate before you eat anything. So you feed the spirit first. And so we had this piece of birch bark in the middle of the table, and we all put some food on it. You know, we were talking about what we're doing. Nobody seemed to notice. Nobody seemed to care. Oh, and my son was there. My youngest son is a beekeeper. And when we were talking about this, he said, this is a thing that is frightening to many, dangerous to some, but a very important part of the whole symbiotic nature of life. And so he brought his bee smoker with bundles of sage that we had grown ourselves. And so to calm this entity, he used the sage smoke in the smoker and his beekeeper energy to help calm it like a swarm of bees so that it could then be moved, because that's how he moves his bees. So his beekeeper energy was there, and he stayed back in the place smoking the edge to make sure it wouldn't come back and to be an anchor for us to make sure we did come back. So there we all were. We had our spirit plate. We poured maple syrup from the tree that was growing on the ground. They made maple syrup. So we covered it. Ruthann said it has a sweet tooth. We used some of Ezra's honey and maple syrup. So here is Stephanie is carrying this basket with the cemetery dirt and rose petals. And Carrie is holding the spirit plate, and they're walking. And I'm walking. I walk with a cane and I'm leaning over. And there had been storms all day and the wind was like all over. We lit our candles and we sang the song and we called, come, come into the light. And then we started walking and they were up ahead. We got to the edge of where the cemetery's edge was, the edge of that property. And it felt like this walking through a heavy, viscous, like gelatin, like trying to walk through gelatin. And it was, you could see there was light. Everything was like amber light, like in spirit travel, but we weren't spirit traveling. And I felt the thing come up and it was like on my back. And I visualized, there was like a little girl in black that reached up for my hand. And so I have my cane in one hand and I'm holding the hand of the spirit girl. And I felt like there was an entire funeral procession. All these people, like from the time, the Victorian times, dressed in black, walking slowly. And I was chanting, "We carry our dead. We carry our grief. We carry our dead," just walking slowly. And it was so hard to walk. And it was about two blocks to the cemetery, straight shot down. And as we were walking along, weird as hell, you know, I mean, Nancy's behind me with her arms up in the air. These two ladies are walking in front of me and I am chanting, "We carry our
dead." That must have been a sight to see. Because it's not New Orleans. If you saw that in New Orleans, that might be one thing. They join you. Yeah.
Right. But in southeastern Michigan, no, that was not it. And these people came up behind and were talking. And I said, just keep going. And I felt the thing start to falter. Well, they crossed over from behind us and there was a car parked on the other side of the street. They didn't even acknowledge us. They went up to the other car and it looked like they were selling drugs or something, and then just sort of left, and we just kept moving. They never looked at us. They never acknowledged us. And they were doing something nefarious that they would have waited till we passed, you know, and we just kept going. And we got to a place where it was one more street to cross and we would enter the cemetery gates. And all of a sudden, this thing goes down into the storm drain. And I was like, oh my gosh, oh no, we don't want it to go back, because there was this activity going on and it had been following us. And all of a sudden I said, "Stay back, stay close together." And I felt it shoot to our left. And I'm like, we need to follow it. So now we are following it. We were pulling it. Now we're following it. And we walked and there was an old gate to the oldest part of the cemetery, the one that was first built, that had the bodies of the family from the house, that had the bodies that had been moved, the stones for those that had been moved. And this thing just was moving quickly and we're trying to keep up.
It smelled dinner.
And we got to the edge of the gate and all of a sudden it was like, it was gone. And it was just gone. And it was like, oh, we did it. And we said, but we're not done. So we go up the hill to the gravestones of the family whose home it was. And we wept, and Carrie just wept and wept. All of the grief and pain that she'd been experiencing was just purged. A police car came in and was shining the spotlight. And here we are standing there, you know, four women standing there in the cemetery, and they were locking up the cemetery. And Carrie said, "It's okay, we could be here, but they just closed the gate. You can't drive in after, you know, 11 o'clock or whatever it was, 8 o'clock. But the light came over them, reflected off the thing, and then just went on. It was like it didn't even acknowledge us being there. Well, then in order to leave and have it not follow us back, we had to laugh to change the vibration, change the energy. So we're cracking up jokes, and there was a gate to get out. We didn't have to climb over the fence. We're laughing about that. And as we walked back to the house, those two blocks, every garage that we passed had motion lights that as we passed came on. And on our way to the cemetery, not one of those went on. And Ezra said, after we went about a half a block, he couldn't see us anymore. And we heard the steeple bells ring from the town hall when we left, and as we came back, they rang again. It was 1 hour that it took to do that. But I think what happened was we stepped into that place where the grief eater was. And we were not those people that came. They did not see us because we weren't there. We were like the ghosts that were following us in this funeral procession. After that, everything in that house and in that neighborhood just peaceful and settled. And so here, the lesson of that is that here was something that when I looked and tried to find out what can I do about this, I asked some energy workers and some people, someone I knew in Chicago that dealt with dark energy. And I said, well, why don't you just, you know how to kill it. You know how to, you know, banish things. Why don't you just do that? And I said, well, it's like a spider. It's a spider in your house. It's in the wrong place. He says, yeah, I see a spider and I smash
yeah,
it.
Yeah, not
said,
me. Well, I take it outside.
I take a spider outside. And he said, well, good luck with that. But bring something ready to destroy it if it doesn't go. I was thinking of doing that. And then I was like, no, I'm not coming with a threat. We are going with love.
That's like taking a gun just in case.
Right. And so I didn't tell him this, but we didn't. We were not prepared if it didn't come. We would have to come up with a plan B or C. But it was the most powerful experience in that realizing that things like bee swarms are terrifying to many, dangerous to some, but so important in our environment, just like these darker energies. And if we can see that and live along with them instead of all these, you know, this is my house, get out. Well, according to whom, you know, you shouldn't be here. Well, maybe they're not the only ones who shouldn't be here. We just need to treat all of the things that we share this world with as neighbors, as our relatives.
We're all connected, and there's an important role and responsibility for each of us in the grand scheme of things. Well, you have given me so much and the listeners to think about. I really want to thank you for your time here. How can people reach you?
Well, I have a website, and it's called Spooky Ms. MSTI, and it's spelled T-I-Y-I. And on the website, there are links. I have a YouTube channel that's also Spooky Ms. T-I. On that YouTube channel, during the pandemic, I told stories every Sunday night, ghost stories, spooky stories, and I saved them all. And they're all on YouTube. So I've got like 50 stories of my own personal experiences or experiences of friends who came and told theirs that we then discussed. I have a Facebook page, Spooky Ms. T-I. And I have two books in my Gatekeeper series. The third Gatekeeper book will be out this year. And I also have a book of poetry that's links to those are on my website. You can also order them on Amazon. I use my birth name as my author's name, which is Antoinette Shippers. T-I is my nickname. So Antoinette Shippers, the books are Beyond Brick and Bone, which is book one. And then A Liminal Life, A Medium's Memoir is book two. And the poetry is Spirit Within, Spirits Throughout.
Well, be sure to include all of those in the show notes. I want to say thank you for being on. We connected through Jen and Jill of Common Mystics. So... Well, and maybe I was thinking too, you know how during the holidays, during Christmas time, people used to tell scary stories because that was just what they did. Maybe you can come on, whether it's Halloween or around Christmas time, and share with some of those. That would be fun.
Absolutely.
Sitting around the fire, you know, and having some hot cocoa.
Absolutely. We did that on my Spooky Ms. T.I. Facebook group during the pandemic via Zoom, where everybody came in and shared their spooky stories.
Oh, that's a great idea. That is fun. Well, thank you again so much for being on.
Thank you for listening to A Psychic Story. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode and join the conversation on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. All episodes are free on your favorite podcast player or at apsychicstory.com. Have a question? Is there a topic you'd like to hear more about? Or have a suggestion for a future guest? Send an email to contact@apsychicstory.com or leave a voicemail message at 1-800-880-1881. We'd love to hear from you, and you may even be featured on a future episode. If you're interested in booking a session with me, you can do that directly on the website. And if you want to hear even more content hosted by yours truly, check out my other show, Supernatural Matters. Reminder that you are automatically entered to win either a free 20-minute intuitive or energy healing session with me if you leave 5 stars along with a positive review. Currently, reviews can be left on Apple, Stitcher, Podchaser, or CastBox podcast players. Don't forget to email contact@apsychicstory.com when you do, because it allows me to get in touch with you if your name is pulled in the drawing. Your name stays in until you win.